This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Today, Pastor Sandy will continue teaching through 1 Samuel chapter 1 on this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Every year, Elkanah loaded up the family in the minivan and made his pilgrimage to Shiloh, where he worshiped God at the tabernacle. And this is where the sparks would fly between Hannah and Peninnah. Every chance she got, Peninnah would stick it to Hannah. Another dig, another poke, another slap in the face. Hannah loved God, but boy, did she hate these trips. The conflict between her and Peninnah spoiled her worship. It distracted her focus from the Lord. What should have been a joyous occasion, a joyous celebration, ended up being a miserable time of exasperation. I'm sure that Peninnah would have preferred to just stay home alone. But the tabernacle was God's house. It was Hannah's duty to meet with others and to worship at Shiloh. It was commanded by God. Staying home sounded appealing, but it wasn't an option acceptable to the Lord. Guys, here is a lesson to us. We too are liable to meet a Peninnah at God's house. People at church, other people can be jealous of your fruitfulness. They can become a source of irritation and frustration and aggravation for you. And our temptation is to just stay home alone. Why should I have to put up with that Peninnah? But you see, staying home from the house of God is never an option. At least not an option acceptable to God. Hebrews 10 verse 25 instructs every believer to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. Guys, don't let a Peninnah rob you of the fellowship and encouragement and worship and opportunities to serve that we glean when we all meet together. God knows all about Peninnah, and yet he still wants you to be involved in your church. Well, in verse 7, Hannah is so upset she can't eat. She's sulking during supper. Elkanah tries to cheer her up in verse 8. Her husband said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons?" He loved his wife, certainly. He hated to see her so upset. But Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. She went up to the tabernacle to pour out her soul to the Lord. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. Then she made a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but you will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head." Hannah asks the Lord for a baby boy, and she makes a twofold vow. First, if God answers her request, she'll see to it that this little boy serves the Lord his whole life long. She'll take him to the tabernacle, she'll turn him over to the priests, and she will enroll him in the ministry. Second, she also says that she'll take a vow and her son will become a lifelong Nazarite. Now, you remember what a Nazarite was. Samson was a Nazarite. The Nazarite was a walking billboard for the virtues and the values of God's kingdom. It was a threefold vow. First of all, he stayed clear of the grape soda. He found his pleasure in the spiritual things, not in the physical. He never cut his locks. Attractiveness for the Nazarite was found internally, not externally. And he avoided contact with the dead, anything that was dead. His life stood for eternal, not temporal pursuits. Samson was also a Nazarite. But the problem with Samson was that he had too many lapses in his timeline, too many withdrawals from godliness. faithfulness failed to accrue in Samson's life and therefore failed to turn into character. And as a result, in times of testing, Samson yielded to temptation and ended up violating his vow. You see, it's amazing. Samson and Samuel were alike outwardly, but they were very opposite inwardly. Well, I love Hannah's prayer. Remember me and not forget your maidservant. After we got married, for 2 years, Kathy and I tried to have a child, but to no avail. And I witnessed firsthand the passionate prayers of a barren woman. Boy, did Kathy pray. And somewhere along the line, she latched on to Hannah's words here, and she kept praying this prayer, Lord, remember me. Lord, remember me. In May of 1982, we attended a pastor's conference where Kathy asked the wives, the pastor's wives, to pray for her that she would have a child. And as they prayed, one of the ladies spoke a word of prophecy. And through this lady, the Lord said, by this time next year, you will have a child. Now, this was the last weekend in May 1982. To make a long story short, Zach was born May the 29th, 1983, 1 year to the date. The very same weekend Zach was born, we were truly blessed. And in light of Kathy's prayer and Hannah's prayer, they prayed the same prayer, we named our son Zachary, which means remembered of the Lord. Wow, the power of a passionate prayer. James 5, verse 17 is true. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Pour out your soul to God and He'll pour out blessings on you. Your youth pastor's proof. Verse 12. And it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her... I'm trying to teach my boys to watch their mouth too, by the way. Now Hannah spoke in her heart... Only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she was drunk. I mean, Hannah's prayer was so passionate, so raw, so emotional, that Eli thought she was tipsy. Who's this drunk woman coming into the tabernacle? Her lips moved, but no words came out. She was praying from her heart. You see, unlike most folks who came to the synagogue, Hannah's goal was not to impress the bystanders, but to do business with God. When you pray, is that your goal? To do business with God? You've got to think it was no accident that the man who was called the prophet of prayer had a mother who put it to practice. I have no doubt that Samuel gained his passion for prayer, the power he had in prayer from his godly mother, Hannah. You know, there is a difference between saying prayers and praying prayers. It's a huge difference. Too many people have turned prayer into a performance. It's the point in the Sunday program where a man stands up and he prays to the people, not really to God. Once there was a man who stood up in church and he shouted out his prayer, and one little boy whispered in his mom's ear, "Wow, if that man lived closer to God, I bet he wouldn't have to shout so loud." Probably true. Hannah prayed like her prayer mattered. Do you pray like your prayer matters? Well, one thing's for sure, prayers that don't matter to you here on earth will certainly not matter to God in heaven. So Eli said to her, "How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you." And Hannah answered and said, "No, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief, I have spoken until now." Then Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition, which you have asked of him." 9 months later, God did just that. And she said, "Let your maidservant find favor in your sight." And so the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And so it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked for him from the Lord. And the word Samuel means heard by God. Now the man Elkanah and his wife went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, now until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word. And so the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bulls, one ephah of flour and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. And I love Hannah's beautiful words in verse 27. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore, I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. So they worshiped the Lord there. I'll never forget the Sunday morning when everyone had left the church except for my wife, my kids, myself, and Kyle. We looked around for Kyle's parents, but they were nowhere to be found. Eventually, we learned that Kyle's mom and dad had driven separate cars that morning, and each parent had thought the other had Kyle, and so they had left him at church. It was funny. But that's kind of what Hannah did with, with Samuel. She left him at church. Of course, it was arranged, and Samuel had duties to do. But like Hannah, we all really do need to give our kids to the Lord. Now, don't bring them up here and drop them off, please. James has got four. I got four. We got enough. But please, give your kids to the Lord. We certainly need to follow, maybe not the literal action of Hannah, but we need to follow in her spirit, in her example. Hannah realized that her son really did belong to the Lord. Her son was God's property. Samuel had only been given to her on loan. Parent, did you know that your child is a loner? That's right. He's been given to you, she's been given to you on loan. Now, if I were to borrow a car, I would go to great extremes to take care of that car. I would make sure that I did nothing to damage it. It doesn't belong to me. Likewise, this is how we should treat our children. Though you're footing the bill, they still don't belong to you. They belong to the Lord, not to you. Keith Green used to sing a song of devotion, I pledge my head to heaven for the gospel. The second stanza got harder. I pledge my wife to heaven for the gospel. But for me, the third stanza was the toughest of all. I pledge my son to heaven for the gospel. You see, it's okay for me to take on the risk and trust the Lord and go to some foreign country to share the Lord in hostile situations. But what's my reaction when my son or my daughter wants to go? Have we really dedicated, given our kids to the Lord? You see, parenting is really a process of giving back to God the gift that He first gave to you. From day one, you're really turning loose of your child a little at a time. Author Alfred Torrey writes, it needs courage to let our children go. But we are trustees and stewards and have to hand them back to life, to God. As the old saying puts it, what I gave, I have. We have to love them and lose them. This is the role of a parent. This past Wednesday, our third born left for college. And we've missed him dearly for the 3 days he was gone before he came back home last night. But we will miss him. And this is just the beginning. He's gone to college, but he'll be gone for good soon. But here's what we have to remember. He never belonged to us. He doesn't belong to us now, but the illusion is that we thought he did. He never really belonged to us. He never has. He was given to God on the day he was born. God has a plan for Nick's life. And we gave him to God again last week. And I'm sure we'll have to give him to God again and again and again. Well, in chapter 2, Hannah prays again. This time she praises God for granting her request. Hannah's praise could be entitled "The Triumph of the Underdog." That's its theme. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord." Hannah had horns? No, her horn was her strength. You know, the horn on an animal is the strength of the animal. And so the Old Testament idiom, the horn, was a person's strength. Her strength is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies. And you know who she's thinking about. Old Penina. She kind of looks over in the minivan at old Penina and she just cracks her a little smile. God's blessed me too. I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. No one is holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you, nor is there any rock like our God. And in verse 3, she surely addresses Penina. Talk no more so very proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is the God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. God alone is the all-knowing judge. Oh, we make assumptions. We jump to conclusions over mere speculation, but God alone is the judge. The bows of the mighty men are broken, and those who stumbled are girded with strength. In other words, God has now turned the tables. She says, those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, and the hungry have ceased from hunger. Even the barren has borne 7, and she who has many children has become feeble. Boy, the Lord knows how to turn the tables, doesn't he? The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings to the grave and brings down to the grave and then brings up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and lifts up. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the beggar from the ash heap to set them among princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. God is the God of the underdog. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. In other words, a poetic way of saying God has laid the earth's foundation. God is in charge of this earth. For he will guard the feet of his saints, but the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength no man shall prevail. This is why we should trust in his strength, not our own. Well, in verse 10, Hannah's prayer becomes a prophecy of the end times. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken in pieces. From heaven he will thunder against them. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. Later in Israel's history, God is going to promise his people a future king who will reign over all the earth for all eternity. The Hebrews will call him the Anointed, which means Messiah. Here God promises strength and exaltation to his anointed. Verse 11, then Elkanah went to his house at Ramah, but the child ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. As a young boy, Samuel is now given back to God. In verse 12, the scene shifts from Hannah's family to the family of Eli, the high priest. Now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. It's sad when men who supposedly represent God don't even know him. And it happens more than you might think. Remember from Judges what happens to an ungodly person? They eventually become an immoral person. Remember, ungodliness produces unrighteousness. And that's what happens here. They don't know God, and they start to act like it. And in the next few verses, we have the crimes of Eli's family exposed before us. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat was boiling. Then he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot, and the priest would take for himself all that the flesh hook brought up. So they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Also, before they burned the fat, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who sacrificed, "Give meat for roasting to the priest, for he will not take boiled meat from you, but raw." And if the man said to him, "They should really burn the fat first, then you may take as much as your heart desires," he would then answer him, "No, but you must give it now. And if not, I'm just going to take it from you." Remember when an animal was brought to the tabernacle to be sacrificed, it was first divvied up. The fat belonged to the Lord. The fat was burned first as a sacrifice to the Lord. The right breast and thigh went to the priest, and the rest of the sacrifice was eaten by the family that had brought the beef. Eli's boys were strong-arming the people. They were demanding more than their share. They were even taking it by force. Thugs had invaded the tabernacle and were working for the priests. These priests were greedy men. It reminds me of the pastor who described to some fellow pastors how he dispersed the Sunday offerings. He says, "Well, I take all the money that we collect and I throw it up in the air, and what God wants, he keeps, and what I'm supposed to take falls back to the ground." It's sad when a pastor becomes a ripoff, when his sole motive is to pad his own pockets. And here's the greatest tragedy, verse 17. "Therefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord." Notice that. The priest had turned the people off from giving to the Lord. People resented giving to God because they knew their money would be used foolishly and selfishly. Whew. Guys, if you don't give to the Lord, that's between you and the Lord. But I definitely don't want it to be because of me or because of our management of the church's funds. This is why we account for every penny. We try to be good stewards with every single penny that you give. We try to use every cent wisely. We don't want to be the reason you don't give to God. Verse 18, "But Samuel ministered before the Lord, even as a child, wearing a linen ephod." And of course, the ephod was that priestly apron, the priest was part of the priestly uniform. "Moreover, his mother used to make him a little robe and bring it to him year by year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. And Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, 'The Lord give you descendants from this woman for the loan that was lent to the Lord.' Then they would go to their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bore three sons and two daughters. Meanwhile, the child Samuel grew before the Lord." Boy, once she got the ball rolling, she couldn't get it stopped, could she? Three sons and two daughters. I tease Kathy sometimes. You know, we had such a hard time having the first one. But then we ended up with three more. I tell her that, you know, barren Karen became fertile Myrtle. Meanwhile, the child Samuel grew before the Lord.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy comes to us from Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain, located in Atlanta, Georgia. Do you live in the area or are you visiting Atlanta? We'd love to see you on a Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:15 a.m. For more information, head over to our website, sandyadams.org, and select the About tab. Once again, that website is sandyadams.org. Did you realize that Pastor Sandy has written several books of his own? These can be an encouragement and a help in different phases of life or things that you're going through. Feel free to look into these resources on our website, sandyadams.org. The message you heard today is just one from a series in 1 Samuel. Pastor Sandy brings sound biblical teaching as he goes through the Bible, book by book, verse by verse. If you'd like to hear more of the messages that he's given, you can find them at sandyadams.org. Just look under the teaching tab. We're so glad you decided to spend your time with us here today. We know that there are many things that need to be accomplished in the course of a day, and we're thankful that this was a priority for you. The book of 1 Samuel has much adventure and life-altering events for several people. So be sure to come back again for another edition of Sandy Adams Radio.